The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Today
FM. It's movie time with Roe McDermott, movies editor of Hot Press. But before we start reviewing the new releases, I want you to grab your friends and wear your florals. Yeah. Blake Lively is in trouble because of the way she has promoted the movie It Ends With Us. Explain to me what's going on here, please.
So It Ends With Us is based on a novel by Colleen Hoover, and it's about a relationship that starts out and everything is picture perfect. The woman in it is called Lily Blossom Bloom, and she's a florist. She falls for a rich neurosurgeon. Everything is beautiful, picture perfect. Small things go wrong. Ryle, her partner, has a bit of a temper, but you know, everything is great. She glosses over things. And then when a man from her past reemerges, the veil is kind of lifted on this relationship, and Lily comes to understand that this relationship has actually turned abusive and she's been lying to herself. And almost the film portrayal is that she's been lying to the audience. She's making the audience feel like everything is picture perfect, and then she revisits these incidents and says, oh no, this is abusive. It's not a perfect film. It's very prettified. It's directed by Justin Baldoni, who people might know from Jane the Virgin, but he also hosts a podcast called the Man Enough Podcast, and he's been really invested in discourse around gender, around masculinity. Kind of really seems like a very good man who's invested in these conversations.
And is it a clever movie in the sense that it sort of deceives you, sucks you in, and then exposes a reality that often isn't shown in movies?
I think it was effective. I've spoken about my experiences of gendered abuse, and I actually hadn't done a lot of reading about the movie, and I was kind of taken aback while watching and actually got quite upset and found it effective. I can understand how people would find it triggering if they didn't know that that switch was coming, and I think that's been a problem with the marketing, that they haven't been advertising this as a movie that deals with domestic violence, with abuse. So I think that can be a problem with people. I think the film is almost, it's nearly good. It's almost too pretty. There's a lot of Taylor Swift songs in it. So it feels like very trendy rather than something that has a deep resonance. I think if I watch this on Netflix, I go, that's interesting, but doesn't hold. But the problem has started with Justin Baldoni, the director, and Blake Lively, who is a producer and also the actress, had some kind of rift. We don't know the details of the rift. There are rumours. She brought in Ryan Reynolds to rewrite a scene, and that wasn't brought by...
That's her husband, isn't it?
That's her husband. She hired an editor to do another version of the film with that apparently is not the one that has been released, but it seems like there was a lot of creative friction on set. But Blake Lively, the writer Colleen Hoover, actress Jenny Slate, who also appears in the film, unfollowed Justin Baldoni on Instagram. And because we're all 12, apparently, this created a lot of drama. Neither of them has spoken about it. But people have really dug in on Blake Lively. Blake Lively has a hair care line out. She has a drinks line out. She's a businesswoman. And she's been using...
She's like a Gwyneth Paltrow, isn't she?
She's
another generation. I think she might be familiar to people from Gossip Girl is where she broke through, wasn't it?
And she tried to have a very Goop-esque lifestyle brand called Preserve that didn't quite work. But she's been marketing her products through the press for this film. She's been dressing in florals. She's been saying, go grab your florals, get your girls, which feels a little bit tone deaf for a movie about domestic violence. She's been flogging her hair care line. She's been bringing Ryan Reynolds into the press because he obviously has Deadpool out. So she feels like she's marketing the movie in a kind of Barbie-esque way, a thematic way, which is completely at odds with the tone of the film. That's really disappointing. It's really disappointing and disheartening. You would think if you're an actress with a big platform, you'd want to use that platform to speak eloquently about domestic violence. It's also completely at odds with how Justin Baldoni is marketing the film. He's speaking incredibly articulately and importantly about domestic violence. He's sharing resources. They're not doing any press together. But there's a difference between Blake Lively not being a good spokesperson for an issue and deserving the wrath of the entire internet.
The pylon.
Absolutely. Because people are digging up interviews where she seemed a little bit snarky to interviewers. They're digging up any evidence that she's horrible. And I understand people being disappointed with her not using her platform effectively. We only do this to women. We did it to Anne Hathaway a few years ago when she was campaigning for her Oscar for Les Mis. People decided we hated it. It became a phenomenon called Hathahate. People did it with Kristen Stewart after the Twilight movies. We suddenly decide if a woman has too much exposure, we're going to tear her personality to shreds. And as we know, there are men, first of all, who've done heinous things and still have careers. But men are very rarely expected to be good spokespeople for societal issues. Like, I've been a film critic for 15 years now. I can count maybe on two hands, probably one, the amount of men who have made like efforts to speak about societal issues. This is filmmakers. stars, actors. But if a woman is a businesswoman, if she's a producer, if she's a mediocre actress, and she's not also an incredible spokesperson for issues, we will pile onto her. So it's, I understand the disappointment with Blake Lively, but the expectation that women have to be perfect and have to behave exactly how we want them and can't just be privileged, ambitious actors in the same way that her husband, for example, is a privileged, ambitious actor who has a lot of side hustles. I've never heard Ryan Reynolds say anything meaningful about anything, but we
not even Wrexham Football Club.
But he's constantly flogging that. He's flogging his gin company. He did a cut of Deadpool and leaked it on the internet and has admitted that he leaked it on the internet to get his movie made. But when Blake Lively wants a different cut of the movie, it's almost this idea of notions. Don't get above your station and behave exactly how we want to. So I understand disappointment in Blake Lively. The pylon does feel misogynist.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about new releases. And there's a documentary about one of the most famous women to have emerged from Ireland, our former president, Mary Robinson. So let's hear a clip for the trailer for Mrs. Robinson.
I remember spending a lot of time looking out this window. I would look out on the river from my bedroom and dream dreams. There were dreams about making life fairer.
Mary is the most indefatigable woman I have ever met.
This strong, feisty, spirited person that goes in and fights for people that need support.
I'm not sure anybody can keep up with them. She must be Irish.
There comes a time where an individual has to take a stand and be prepared to pay a price for taking that stand.
Has its first woman president.
The women of Ireland, who instead of rocking the cradle, rocked the system.
I have decided to name Mrs. Mary Robinson High Commissioner for Human Rights.
I was going to try and make a difference and speak truth to power.
I have fought for climate justice. It's for the children around the world.
Mary Robinson has not only shone a light on human suffering, but illuminated a better future for our world.
I suppose I would like to be remembered as somebody who saw the need for change during her life and tried to make as much change as possible.
Is this a hagiography?
A little bit. Now, I love that quote from Mary Robinson. I think that's how she will be remembered. And I think that's what the film is trying to do. This is directed by Aoife Keller, who directed 1 Million Dubliners. And Aoife has such a warm, loving approach to filmmaking. And Mary Robinson is such an incredible subject for a documentary and deserves it. So it tracks her growing up in Ballina. It tracks her being really ambitious, one of very few women who are studying law in Trinity. It tracks her meeting her husband. Some personal things like her parents not coming to her wedding because her husband was Protestant and they didn't approve. And then it goes into her career, her real desire to fight for equality. I will say the documentary, like Mary Robinson, doesn't like to get its hands dirty. So there's references to things like the contraception train. And while Mary Robinson said to feminists at the time, like, I will help you legally, Nell McCafferty, now the late great Nell McCafferty, is interviewed very briefly and says, yeah, she was there and she was supportive. She wasn't on the train at any stage. But then it tracks her campaign for president and how the presidency at that time was really for older male politicians and was kind of seen as quite a sleepy role, and how she really reinvigorated it and said, I'm going to fight for people, I'm going to fight for women. And it wasn't expected that she would be as popular as she would be, but it was really about that tide turning on women's issues particularly, and women wanting to be seen and to be understood and be supported. It does go into some of the blunders that she has made. So I think leaving for the UN High Commissioner job is addressed. And
yeah, because she did that 6 months to run the presidency. A lot of people found that was quite upsetting, that she put her own personal ambition before continuing to finish out the most important job in Ireland.
Yeah, and I think people were disappointed and felt a little bit abandoned, and she addresses that and says that the timing wasn't great. And also, of course, she goes into the issue with the Dubai princess. And
does she? Sheikha Latifa, does that go into it in any great detail and depth?
They do spend a bit of time on it, and she says it was, you know, an incredible mistake, and she explains how she kind of...
Just explain that to people if they're not familiar with the story.
So there was a case of Sheikha Latifa who went missing, and there were rumours rumors that she was trying to escape Dubai and that it was a really oppressive life and that she really needed to escape for her own well-being and that she was in danger. And then there was propaganda released essentially saying, oh no, she's mentally unwell and so she's with the family and she's doing better. And Mary Robinson went to meet her, but it was a chaperoned visit and there was really very little ability to communicate freely. And then Mary Robinson came out and said, no, she's fine, she's absolutely safe. And so it almost seemed like she had fallen for the propaganda and become kind of a shill for it. So she does speak about that and she apologises profusely, which she had before. So she does address it. But a lot of the film is about just her being an inspiring figure, which she is. But I think the documentary, while lovely and covering a lot of ground, it lacks a bit of voice. It lacks a bit of perspective. So it feels like a lovely documentary to go see in the IFI on a Sunday and to celebrate Mary Robinson. It feels like a gorgeous film for like Leaving Cert students to watch, but it lacks a little bit of depth and edge. And I think Mary Robinson, she's warm, she's funny, she's sharp. And I wish some of that sharpness and even that wit was more present in the documentary.
Let's talk entertainment. What about Blink Twice?
Blink Twice. So this is the directorial debut of Zoe Kravitz, daughter of Lenny Kravitz, nearly stepdaughter of Nicole Kidman, and now fiancé of Channing Tatum, who stars in this movie. So this is about friends Frida and Jess, played by Naomi Aki and Laia Choquette. They're waitresses and they're preparing to be working at a fundraiser where tech mogul Slater King is rumoured to appear. Slater King was the CEO, like the playboy, the most beloved tech mogul in the world, and then some undescribed abuses of power, inappropriate behaviour made him apologise publicly and then kind of retreat from public life. He's been spending a lot of time on his public island or his private island. He's been doing a lot of therapy, apparently. But they have a meet, Frida and Kate Slater King have a meet cute at this fundraiser. And he says, me and my friends are going back to my island to party. Do you want to come? And of course the girls take it up. A billionaire tech mogul invites you to party on a private island. You do it for the plot. They go, there are some things that are weird, right? Everyone is expected to surrender their phones. Everyone dresses in white. These are things that are weird, but they also just could be things that rich people do. But then things get a little bit weirder. The cocktails are bottomless. The food is Michelin quality. The MDMA after dinner is flowing. But Frida and Jess start to realise they're forgetting things. They're waking up with bruises they don't remember getting. There's dirt under their fingernails. They don't know what's happening. They don't know how they can leave the island. Things start to get weird.
Let's have a clip from it where Frida begins to feel that all is not right on this private island.
Something horrible is about to happen.
What?
Our days were good. That's when the bad stuff happened.
Why would you think that?
Life? What day is it?
I don't know.
When are we leaving?
Whenever you want.
That's not an answer.
Are you having a good time?
Yes.
Good.
So is this dark?
It does get dark, but it's so beautiful to look at. I think Zoe Kravitz is such a stylish director. And there's a line in that where you say, what day is it? She's playing with disorientation all the time. She kind of goes through the routine of life on this island. You get up, you start drinking, you enjoy the pool, you have gorgeous dinner, you laugh, you party, you get up. And she does that on repeat. So we're enjoying the beauty of the island, but we also lose track of time. They lose track of time. What's really interesting is the dynamic between the female characters in this film, because Frida and Jess are kind of normal girls. They're waitresses. Everyone else, all the other women who have been invited to the island are model-esque. They're beautiful. They're reality TV stars. So they're aware that there's a certain level that's happening here. And they're like, we're ordinary girls. We can't be the buzzkills. So we have to conform. Meanwhile, the beautiful model-esque women are looking at them and they're getting more attention from Slater going, where is this power dynamic happening? I'm usually the center of attention. And so that idea of women being pitched against each other and surveilling each other constantly becomes really interesting. And it prevents the women from speaking to each other and going, something weird is happening here. Zoe Kravitz, I don't want to give too much away. I will say, try and avoid the trailer if you can. I feel like it gives too much away. It's playing with ideas of trauma, of patriarchy, of forgetting, and also the idea of what does an apology mean? And it's playing with all these brilliantly. She layers in hints and dynamics so brilliantly in the first two acts of this film. And then when the climax happens, it's not exactly surprising, but it's dark and it's smart and it's really brilliantly played with. This film is lingering in my head. It's not flawless. The final couple of scenes let it down a little bit, I think, but the themes and the ideas are going to be really resonant and such an effective debut.
Well, just finish briefly. Travis Kelce is heading to the big screen as an actor. How would you describe him now? If you had to give him one description, how would you describe him?
Taylor Swift's boyfriend who apparently holds a football.
Oh my God. You see, he's the Kansas Chiefs football star. He is a winner of Super Bowl and you're reducing him to the status of Taylor Swift's boyfriend.
Reparations. Gender reparations. I'm just going to describe him as somebody's wife. Travis Kelce, I am not a football fan. I was not aware of him. Of course, the world is now far more aware of him. He's appeared on stage at the Eras Tour with his now girlfriend,
He's
Taylor
played
Swift.
In Super Bowl.
I've never watched a Super Bowl in my life.
Not even the halftime show.
I watch the halftime shows. But yes, apparently they're discussing marriage. They're discussing prenups. It's all getting exciting. But he is now being considered for a role in Loose Cannons, which is a film that's coming out. It's kind of a buddy comedy cop movie. It has the tone of kind of Lethal Weapon, Bad Boys. And people are now saying he's a Nepo boyfriend, right? He's a Nepo baby boyfriend because Taylor Swift.
I mean, he has no achievements in his own right whatsoever, has he?
This is where it's interesting. Because people are saying he'd never get this role if he wasn't going to Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift has appeared in movies. She's appeared in shows like New Girl. She's appeared in kind of those collective story movies that came out in 2000. She appeared in Cats. No one thinks Taylor Swift is a good actress. I think we all appreciate her cameos, but and we say good attempt, but she's not known as a good actress.
Even in Cats.
Even in Cats.
Ro McDermott, movies editor of Hot Press. Thank you so much for being with us. We'll be back with more after this.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.